Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001. Sharing the Affliction.
Hello. The degeneracy and the general nuttiness that increasingly afflict American society afflict everyone in that society, even those who are deliberately promoting the degeneracy. Like the sailor who drills holes in the bottom of the ship to get even with his crewmates against whom he has a grievance, and then drowns along with the rest of the crew when the ship goes down, the Jews in America often are obliged to suffer along with their intended victims. Feminism provides a good example of that. Jews played a hugely disproportionate role in inflicting that malady on American society. Not only was nearly every significant feminist writer and publicist of the past half century a Jewess, but the Jewish media bosses enthusiastically endorsed it all. They made feminism one of the cornerstones of political correctness. And yet I suspect that both Jewish men and women suffer approximately as much from this disease they unleashed on us as we do. I suspect that there are as many frustrated and embittered Jewesses per capita as there are frustrated and embittered Gentile women who have tried unsuccessfully to be what the feminists told them they should be, but that nature did not intend them to be. And I suspect that at least the same percentage of Jewish males have been burned by contact with feminists as Gentile males have. Homosexuality is another example. Homosexuality is as abhorred in Jewish tradition as it is in Aryan tradition, despite the prevalence of homosexual practices among the Semitic tribes from which the Jews sprang. The prescribed punishment for homosexuals in the Jewish Bible is stoning to death. And our ancestors in Northern Europe used to drown them. But of course, it is above all the Jewish arbiters of political correctness who have taught young Americans that homosexuality is normal and that we must never speak disparagingly of homosexuals or homosexual behavior. And the Jews, more than anyone else, are the ones who have changed the whole environment in which young Americans grow up in a way which encourages sexually ambivalent youngsters to become even more confused and get on the wrong track. And yet, in spreading the sickness among our people, they themselves have become infected by it. In fact, homosexuality seems to be substantially more common among Jewish males in America today than among our own men, which is the only favorable result that I can see of the campaign to make homosexuals a favored class. An amusing example of the way in which the Jews have bitten themselves inadvertently in their exertions to take a bite out of us came to my attention just a few days ago. There's a Jewish school on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, the Rodef Sholem Day School. It's affiliated with a Reform synagogue. It accepts non-Jewish students as well as Jews, and some rich, trendy Gentile yuppies send their kids there. The tuition is $15,000 a year for pre-kindergarten kiddies and $20,000 for sixth graders. 2 weeks ago, just a week before Mother's Day, the students at Rodef Sholem were sent home with notes informing their parents that in the interests of political correctness, there no longer would be any observances of Mother's Day or Father's Day at the school. Previously, the younger children had designed Mother's Day and Father's Day cards in class, and there had been other school programs of activities in connection with these two holidays. The note sent home with the students announcing the end of these programs said, among other things, and I quote, "Families in our society are now diverse and varied. We are a school with many different family makeups, and we need to recognize the emotional well-being of all the children in our school." The note went on to say that the recognition of holidays such as Mother's Day and Father's Day, quote, may not be a positive experience for all children. Well, many parents complained, and what emerged more clearly was that the dropping of Mother's Day and Father's Day was intended to avoid making children living in homosexual households, that is, children with two mommies or two daddies, feel left out. Actually, a more important reason for the move was to avoid offending the homosexuals who were paying the very substantial tuition for these unfortunate children. One of these homosexuals, who, with his male partner, had an adopted son at the school, came forward and boasted that he had persuaded the school to drop its Mother's Day observance. You know, I referred to this bit of nuttiness at Rhode F. Sholem Day School as amusing, because it is an example of the Jews' own chickens coming home to roost. What they are doing to destroy our society is deliberate. It's calculated. It's the sort of thing they've done in every Gentile society through the ages. Their aim is to break down the structure of our society, make our people abandon our values and our morals and forget our traditions, eventually forget who we are. Their aim is to get white kids to wear backward baseball caps and baggy shorts and listen to rap music and worship black rappers and black basketball players. Their aim is to get teenaged white girls to have black boyfriends. That is the softening up process they use to make it easier for them to take over our society and exploit our people. Promoting the notion that homosexuality is normal and that every sort of freak must have his feelings protected, that everyone else must be prevented from doing or saying anything that may offend a freak or make him feel like a freak, is part of the process. The core idea the Jews are insinuating into the minds of our people is that no sexual orientation, no race, no set of moral values, no type of family structure, no standard of beauty, no cultural tradition, that is, no art, no music, no literature, is better than any other. They're all equivalent. A family consisting of two adult homosexuals and an adopted child is just as normal, just as deserving of public acceptance and respect and insurance benefits as a family consisting of a white man and a white woman and their natural children. Under the skin, blacks and whites are the same. A painting by Rembrandt or Vermeer has no more inherent artistic value than the daubings of a Chagall or a Rothko. That's the message. And its corollary, of course, is that we all should let our guard down against the Jews. We should not be suspicious of them. We shouldn't regard them as different or dangerous and try to keep them out. We shouldn't try to stop them from taking over. They may seem a little different, but that's only superficial. Really, we're all equivalent. No group is better than any other group. Indoctrinating a host population with that poisonous message has been the Jews' key to taking over, sucking dry, and destroying society after society. Let me elaborate on that statement about the Jews' modus operandi. It is also their modus vivendi. It seems almost to be genetically programmed survival behavior. Destruction is not their primary goal, but rather sucking. But the fact is that the method they use for softening up a society so that they can suck its blood is inherently destructive. When they approach any healthy, homogeneous society in which the people have a strong sense of identity and community, the Jews are outsiders. They are different, and they are regarded with suspicion. If they try sucking any blood, they'll be slapped down hard. So their first task is to undermine the people's sense of community and identity, and at the same time to destroy their homogeneity, to make the society more diverse, Then the Jews can slip in unnoticed and take over. But by that time, the society no longer is healthy. It has been poisoned. The people no longer have the will to resist. The Jews are unique. Their modus operandi is unique. That's one of the reasons they have been so successful at breaking into other people's societies. Their hosts, their victims, aren't prepared to counter them. We've experienced nothing quite like the Jews during our evolution. They take us by surprise every time. But even a people, as different from us as the Jews, have some characteristics in common with us. Most human societies have some characteristics in common. There are certain characteristics which are essential for group survival in all societies. A sense of group identity and exclusiveness, for example. The Jews have it to an extraordinary degree, and we used to have it before the Jews went to work on us. Another common survival characteristic is a strong family structure. When the Jews set out to undermine these characteristics in us, they inevitably became affected to some extent by their own poison. That's what happened to the Rodef Sholem Day School, for example. They think it's fine to promote families with two mommies or two daddies among us, but they are not so happy when that sort of pathology also takes hold among them. You may be surprised to hear this, but sometimes I receive letters of protest from Jewish listeners. They tell me, "Hey, we're not all like the Jews you talk about in your broadcasts. Some of us are decent, hard-working family people who are as unhappy with what's happening to America as you are. Don't blame all of us for what a few are doing. We're not all like Sumner Redstone and Gerald Levin and Michael Eisner, and David Geffen, and Steven Spielberg. We're not all like Madeleine Albright, and Elie Wiesel, and Mark Rich, and Ariel Sharon." Well, I can accept that. There are somewhere between 6 and 7 million Jews in the United States, about 2.5% of the population. One expects a lot of variety among that many Jews. There are the evil monsters, the Sumner Redstones, and the Steven Spielbergs working day and night to weaken and mislead and corrupt our people in order to make us easier prey for their people. And there are many Jews who pay very little attention to what the Redstones and the Spielbergs are doing. They're too busy just tending to their own affairs. And I'm sure that some of those hard-working Jews are not happy that they're being splashed with the same filth that the Redstones and the Spielbergs are happily heaping onto their Gentile neighbors. They may be somewhat less likely to be affected than the Gentiles, just as many venomous reptiles are immune to their own venom. But still, it is clear that some of the Jewish parents of children at Rodef Sholem Day School on New York's Upper West Side are not pleased that their kiddies are being taught that it's just as good to have two daddies who booger each other in the living room as it is to have a traditional family with a natural father and a natural mother living together. I should tell you, however, that although I understand their feelings, I am not especially sympathetic. Sumner Redstone and Elie Wiesel and Madeleine Albright haven't done their damage just by working alone as individuals. They have worked as members of the Jewish community, the Jewish tribe. Without the support of their tribe, they could not have made such a cesspit of our society. Sumner Redstone's earliest predecessors were pushcart peddlers in New York. The pushcart peddlers formed the basis on which the next generation of pawnbrokers began accumulating money. And the pawnbrokers led to bigger money lenders, and then to the big investment bankers with the power to finance wars and revolutions. And then came the master corruptors, like MTV owner Redstone, with billions of dollars to buy television networks and newspaper chains and film studios. And even with his billions, Bridgestone couldn't corrupt America's teenagers by himself. His whole media empire is staffed from top to bottom with members of his tribe. It is the unhappy parents of the Jewish kiddies at Rodef Sholom Day School who form the manpower pool from which the Redstones draw their recruits. You can't help your fellow tribesmen make a cesspit out of the society you're living in and hope to avoid the stink entirely. And the fact is that it's not just a few billionaire Jews making our society stink. Nearly every time a case comes to light involving large-scale fraud or vice or corruption, there are Jews playing the lead roles. For a minority making up only 2.5% of the U.S. population, their involvement in vice and corruption is really phenomenal. As a race, we certainly have our own weaknesses and vices, but the Jews seem to be attracted irresistibly to our vices so that they can exploit them and at the same time exacerbate them. There's a sensational example of this in a trial which just began this week in the U.S. District Court in Atlanta. It's the racketeering trial of Gold Club owner Steve Kaplan and some of his associates. Kaplan's rise to wealth and power in the vice industry follows the classic Jewish pattern. His father was a magazine peddler in New York's Grand Central Station. Young Steve lusted after money and status, and he cultivated his father's underworld contacts to get himself started as a nightclub operator. Eventually, he was able to buy into Atlanta's Gold Club, and then, in 1994, he elbowed his co-owner out. Under Kaplan's ownership, the Gold Club became the principal vice club in Atlanta. Featuring nude dancers and overpriced drinks, it became a favorite hangout for Atlanta's degenerate yuppie set. Then Kaplan began inviting black basketball players to the Gold Club, giving them free drinks. Soon he began pressuring the white strippers he employed as entertainers to have sex with the black basketball players he invited. The white yuppies would come to the Gold Club to socialize with black basketball stars such as Dennis Rodman, Patrick Ewing, and Charles Oakley, and Kaplan would provide white girls to the blacks to keep them coming back. He made his club into a multicultural brothel, white girls for black celebrities. He also engaged in credit card fraud, loan sharking, and the bribery of local police and politicians. Atlanta, of course, had brothels and corruption even before the Jews began flocking there after the Second World War and made it the New York of the South. And there are topless and bottomless honky-tonks owned by Gentiles in many American cities. But it was Jews who multiculturalized prostitution, just as it was Jews who multiculturalized professional sports, and Jews who built up commercialized sex into such a huge business. The latter two activities have had an enormous boost from the Jewish media, of course. My point is that while vice is by no means exclusively Jewish, Jews have exploited it far out of proportion to their numbers, and they have been the principal agents of change in multiculturalizing it. We'll get quite a few instructive tidbits in this regard during the Kaplan trial, which is expected to last several months. Don't expect to see Kaplan behind bars when it is over, however. He has $50 million to defend himself, and for a Jew, being tried in Atlanta is the next best thing to being tried in New York. The Jews have the court system in both places pretty well skewed in their favor. An indicator of this is that Kaplan is still out on bond, despite the fact that as a loan shark, He ordered the beatings of at least 20 people who failed to make a payment on time, and in the current case, he has sent people out to track down and intimidate potential witnesses against him. But the judge clearly believes that this nice Jewish boy doesn't need to be locked up to keep him out of mischief during his trial. And just in case, the jurors need to be reminded that Kaplan is entitled to special consideration because all Jews are victims of bigotry. In his opening statement on Tuesday of this week, Kaplan's lawyer, Steve Sadoff, told the court that the only reason Kaplan is being prosecuted is that he is, quote, a stereotypical New York Jew. The lawyer for a black Atlanta cop, who is one of Kaplan's co-defendants, took a similar approach. The cop is a defendant because he took bribes from Kaplan and tipped off Kaplan whenever a license inspection or other visit from city officials to the Gold Club was scheduled. His lawyer complained that the trial is racist because all of the sports celebrities the prosecution plans to call as witnesses, the sports celebrities who had free sex with Kaplan's white strippers, are black. You know, I really don't like people like Steve Kaplan or his lawyer. I wouldn't like them even if they weren't involved in the corrupting of our people. There's something about stereotypical New York Jews which rubs me the wrong way. I don't like them at all. I don't want them around me or my people. I doubt very much that I would like the people who run Rodef Sholem Day School, even if they weren't busy spreading the notion that homosexual families are normal and ought to be accepted. And even when it comes to Jews of the sort who write me to protest that they aren't like the Jews I talk about in my broadcasts, I never can forget that they are, in fact, still Jews. They are members of Steve Kaplan's tribe. And without the tribe, Steve Kaplan wouldn't be able to do what he does. They may tell me that they don't approve of Kaplan, but in fact, I see too many Kaplans in their tribe. And I don't see any real effort on the part of the rank-and-file tribe members to change that. In Israel, they are able to do exactly what they want, to make their own laws to suit themselves. And people like Kaplan flourish there. Israel is the world center of the white slave trade. In Israel, it isn't illegal to own slaves, to buy and sell human beings, so long as they aren't Jews. White women, our women, are kidnapped from Eastern Europe and taken to Israel to be used the way Kaplan uses white women in Atlanta. Kaplan really would be at home in Israel. I think we ought to send him there. I also think that we ought to send the people who run the Rodef Sholem Day School there. I think that we ought to send the rest of the members of the tribe there too, even the ones who tell me they don't approve of people like Kaplan. I think that we ought to give them one warning. Release all of your white slaves. Turn over all of your illegal nuclear weapons. Close down your illegal biological warfare laboratories and behave yourselves. Otherwise, we'll put a quick and permanent end to your mischief. And I think that we ought to stick to our word. Thanks for being with me again today.